Tonight on Ham Nation, Wiles at the helm of Space Weather, Radio Retail, DXing, Newsline, and Project Building. Find out who all these ladies are right here next on Ham Nation. Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless. Visit lastpass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
Ham Nation episode 439 for February 5th, 2020. Ham's Gone Wild 2.0. Hello, everyone. It's Ham Nation time. This is a show mostly talked about amateur radio. And tonight, though, we have a special episode. That's right. It's ladies' night. We have some great guests here. Say hello, everyone. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
First, I'd like to take this moment to thank WTWW for also streaming to shortwave. All of you listeners out there, stay tuned. We're going to have a great show for you tonight. Let's go to Val out there in Illinois. Valerie, how you doing tonight?
Hey, bad news. I'm day 11 of the flu, but good news, 7 days without a cigarette. But I got some really good stuff coming up. The flu couldn't keep me away from being on Ladies' Night. So I'm going to be talking about QSO parties, and there's some DX coming up, so hopefully you'll stay tuned for that. Back to you.
Very good. Now let's go over to your neighbor there. We've got Melanie, K8KSU. How you doing tonight, Mel?
Hi, Amanda. Doing great. It's going to snow here tonight, so a little bit cold. We're going to talk about a few things coming up at DX Engineering soon.
Great, and a lot of things about Dayton and Hamvention, so we look forward to it. All right, let's go out west. We've got, not only is she very popular on Twitter, she's one of the most favorite Ham Nation guests ever, and we enjoy her so much. We've got Dr. Tamitha Scove. How you doing, Dr. T?
You mean I was supposed to prepare something? I don't know. What should I talk about? Do you think I should? Does anybody have any idea what maybe I should talk about tonight? I'll cobble something together between now and then. How's that?
Okay, no pressure. I think you might know what you're going to talk about. We're definitely not going to ask you to talk about Aries stuff, though, okay? Anyhow, we've really got a great show lined up for you. Don't worry, we have more guests than this, and it's going to be exciting. Everyone's going to learn something. So, Valerie, why don't you take it away? What do you got for us tonight?
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about this new thing called the State QSO Party Challenge. So we're going to talk about the State QSO Party Challenge 2020. For those of you who haven't heard, there's a new challenge out this year, and it'll have the same feel as that thing that we loved and missed so much, the Centennial, or National Parks on the Air. So let me kind of get into it, and then we're going to talk about a third-party add-on that you can use for your different contests, mostly QSO parties, but it can be used for other applications as well, and I'll kind of go through that real quick. The State QSO Party Challenge, what it is if you go to stateqsoparty.com, you can get all the rules and information, but every time you enter a State QSO Party and you put your score out on 3830scores.com, you're automatically entered into the challenge. Now, in order to, they're going to have different award levels. In order to reach those award levels, you have to participate in at least 2 QSO parties, and you have to make at least 2 QSOs in each QSO party that you enter. So they're also looking for award sponsors because this is brand new. And it's really had a lot of momentum, and we only had 3 QSO parties so far. You may have missed Vermont, Minnesota, and British Columbia, but you can still catch up. So right after last weekend, this is what it looks like now. It shows a history of how many logs have been submitted on 3830 for these prior QSO parties. And last year there was 169. This year so far, 472 have been updated. So it looks like it's going to be a very popular thing if you want to get involved. So first thing you'll have to do after you enter a CUSO, state CUSO party, even if you live in Utah, you can enter the Kansas CUSO party, you know, as an out-of-state entry. So when you're done with your CUSO party, you're going to want to go to 3830scores.com. And if you've never been there before, it's where people go and post their scores after any contest. A lot of times it takes 2, 3, 6 months before you know if you won a contest. Well, so people come to 3830 and they post their raw scores. So these are not after any errors and things like that. These are just your raw scores. But if you go to the homepage here, see right there, there's the State CUSO Party Challenge. Okay. So what you'll do is if you did say you did the Minnesota CUSO Party, when you're done, you would just come into the Minnesota CUSO Party. Minnesota over here is where you enter your scores. Minnesota CUSO Party over here. And you would just put in your email address. You want to send a copy to yourself and pick all the categories that qualify if you're out of state, in state, and what power you used and things like that. And then you just submit it. And then when you're done, you can go back and then you can go into that CUSO party and you should find yourself somewhere in the mix here somewhere and see how you did. Now you can sort these obviously by class, power, score. You can just put up your contest club and you can look at how you did compared to everyone else. And by doing that, you are automatically entered in the CUSO party challenge. So here is where all the people who are entered so far after just last weekend. And you can see a lot of people. So, and then you can also sort this by points, which I know everybody's going to do because everybody wants to be king of the hill, right? If you have that competitive spirit. So, and then also while you're in here, here's the website to the State CUSO Party. So you can learn more about the State CUSO Party. Now, everybody's automatically, if you post on 3830, you're automatically going to be in that leaderboard. If you, for some reason, don't want to be, you can actually opt out. So your call sign doesn't show up there. But here's where all the rules are. And you can see, here's all, we've had three go so far. This weekend, we've got South Carolina and North Carolina coming up. And here's all the CUSO parties that are approved. Look at that. So there's still a lot more CUSO parties for the year. This is a calendar year contest. So, and then here's where you go to try and earn different challenge levels, diamond, platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. Okay. And then here, again, there's the opt out somewhere in here too. Participation. Yeah. So if you want to opt out right here, you can email them and opt out. If you want to help become an award sponsor, you can contact them and they would gladly like to get sponsors. So you guys out there, if you have you belong to a club and you sponsor your state CUSO party, it might be nice for you guys to sponsor an award or you manufacturers out there. So hopefully you guys can get involved with this. I mean, it sounds like a really fun thing and something to keep us going every weekend, something to do every weekend, kind of like when we had the centennial event, you know. So next I'm going to talk about the Mulch Chaser. This is a add-on app that Jerry and I like to use and a lot of our friends in the SMC use too. If you go to N1MM and that you use that for your software, I'm not sure if it's available on other software. Probably is. I just haven't looked into it. But if you go to their third-party section and you go down to the multiplier map, you'll see here where the download link is. So you can click there and download that to the same computer where you keep your N1MM, okay? And so once you get that downloaded, you're going to go and under the file section, you have to point to your log. Now, if you're like me and Jerry or Amanda and Jeff, there's two hands in the household, you might actually have two different databases. When they say, when they want you to point to the log, they actually mean your database in N1MM. So you want to find your MDB file from your N1MM. If we switch back and forth between Jerry and I have to make sure I go to point to the right one. Otherwise, it won't link when I bring up my N1MM. Also, then once you have that up and you click on the open configuration, it's going to bring you to all these states. See, we got the 7QP, Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, California. They have and every state in there and every CUSO party in there. And so you pick whichever CUSO party you're in. Okay. And what will happen is, here's my N1MM stuff, right, around here. But see this right here? There's a little box of South Carolina. So, like, say I work NTTU. Sorry, Lou, I just made up a county for you from that state. But it's Horry County. And so I put that in, and all of a sudden it made Horry County red. So as I work, everybody, it's going to turn this stuff red on me. So that is really nice. At a glance, you know how many counties you're missing. One other thing, I like to do a little trick. You know, I pull up the state CUSO party website, and then I bring up their counties, and I kind of put it off on the side here, because a lot of people say Greenwood County, and you're not sure, is it G-R-E-E or G-R-W-D, like right here, okay? So I always have that up on as well. And this is, you don't just have to use this for state CUSO parties. This is good for like NAQP. Also, field day, because you can pull up, there's one in that config of just North America. So you could pull that up and have that up on your field day computer. And as you work each state and each territory in Canada, it'll turn that all red. So that's kind of a nice little thing to have. So that's all I've got right now for contests. Also, I want to let you know, I was supposed to have the guys from South Orkney on last week. Unfortunately, I was really sick, a lot sicker than I am now. So we had to postpone that. But I'm hopefully going to have them on live. Now, they're going to be on the air about 2 weeks from now. So hopefully we can do some magic and get those guys live on the air from Antarctica for you. So look for South Orkney in the next couple of weeks to activate, because that I know that's an all-time new one for me. So back to you, Amanda.
I was just going to ask you, you've never worked Antarctica? I haven't.
No, I've worked Antarctica. I have not worked South Orkney.
Okay.
I've worked Antarctica.
But it's so exciting to get the ATNOs there. And I'm really looking forward to it. Mel's going to talk about the equipment that they're taking with them here in just a little bit. So that's exciting. I did have to ask, you missed the North American CUSO party because you guys were on a cruise, right?
I believe so. We did. I think that's probably where we got whatever we got. Jerry got it first. I tried to not get it, but I got it. So, yeah, we did. We had a great time. I finally got my QSL cards in from Grand Cayman. So anybody who sent those to me in the mail, I'm sorry. I haven't even opened my mail. You should see how high my stack is. But today was my first day out in the shack in almost 12 days. So I will try and get through my mail and get those QSL cards out for you if you worked me when I was at Grand Cayman. So. Sorry for the delay.
One other question. So you guys kind of were planning on being somewhere really warm this weekend. What's going on this weekend?
Oh, hamcation. We had to cancel our hamcation. We were going to go to Orlando this weekend, but we canceled that because, again, I'm under the weather, and last thing I want to do is get on a plane and spread it to everybody else. But, yeah, that was going to be our first time. But I know a lot of people are going to be down there. I think Bob's going to be down there. I'm not sure if Gordo's going down, but... yeah, that should be a good time.
It looks like it. It always looks like so much fun. And after we just got 8 inches of snow, I wish that's where I was headed too.
It's snowing nonstop here now. I don't know how many inches will be out there when I leave here.
Wow. Well, Valerie, thank you so much. This state CUSO challenge, everyone, by the way, looks like a ton of fun. And this is really a good way to get a lot of people that aren't in those states to come in and give you some challenges and some competitions.
Right. So I think well, because a lot of times, like you get on, I got on the air for Indiana CUSO Party, I remember, and I maybe worked 12 people. You know, now, I mean, those people will have a lot more people to work. It's going to be a lot more, you know, a lot more activity. So it will be a lot more fun when you're operating your own state CUSO Party.
Absolutely. Well, I really look forward into checking that out, and everyone should do the same. Even if it's just playtime, like you're not serious about it, just get on there, at least fill out your profile and get logged in and start logging your CUSO points. That way everybody
knows. Make at least two and put them on 3830. Make two and put them on 3830. That's all you need to do.
There you go. Thank you so much, Valerie. Well, hey, you stick around. I know we have so many other great guests here. And speaking of another great guest, we have Melanie Hardman, K8KSU. Now, yeah, a lot of you in the chat probably recognize Mel because she joins us in the chat room so much, and we appreciate it. She always puts in some extra links for people to find equipment and stuff. And, oh, yeah, okay, so she does work for DX Engineering, too. I'll go ahead and mention that. Maybe that, too. But she's really brilliant, and she's been helping them in a lot of their ventures, and we're going to talk about some of those tonight. How are you doing, Mel?
I'm doing pretty good today. You know, I had a long day at work today, getting things ready for all of our upcoming events, but things are going pretty good.
That's great. So you had some things you wanted to talk about, including the All Bands and Contest University, Hamvention coming up, and you're going to talk about SorkMe as well. So why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Sure. I just have a few topics to talk about tonight. One of the biggest things is this year is DX Engineering's 20th anniversary. We started manufacturing own clamps about 20 years ago, and now we've expanded our product offering significantly. So you'll see a special logo on our website and in our ads, and that's kind of what it means. Another big thing that we've got going on is On All Bands. It's onallbands.com. Articles are posted there every day, different topics, product reviews, tech articles, events going on. It's not only written by DX Engineering staff, but we have guest writers like Ward Silver, and Sean Kutzko, and Anthony Liskery. So a lot of good things posted there. Bookmark it and visit it as often as you can. There's, you know, very informative articles going on. Another big thing coming up is Contest University registration is open. This is going to be May 14th at the Crown Plaza. Tim has, and K3LR and Terry has a bunch of great professors scheduled. Rob Sherwood, Tim Jellison, Ward Silver again, Doug Grant, and even Marty Soloway will be a professor there. It's going to be a full day of training. There will be breakfast and lunch included in the registration fee. I'm sure a bunch of you in the chat room have attended before, so let everybody know that it's going on again, and everybody will have a great time. I think Val's attended as well before. And then next, after that, you know, Hamvention, we're getting ready. We're expanding our booth this year. We're going to have more sales counters, new products to show off, and, of course, technical staff there. If you're planning on attending, you'd like to place a pre-order to make sure we have something there, you can call our sales line to place your order, to pick up your order at the booth. Don't worry if you're unable to attend, though. You can still place your order online or over the phone. We'll have some limited staff there. If you have any tech questions, please email us. Don't call them the sales line. Some of the guys aren't that tech savvy. They're just there answering the calls and helping taking your orders. And we'll get back to you as soon as we get back from Hamvention. There's going to be no delays in shipping. They're going to be packing and preparing the orders all weekend. So if you come to Hamvention and place your order on Friday, your order is going to ship on Friday. And you'll probably have it by the time you get home. Another thing that Val talked about, South Orkney. In regards to that, you know, have you guys got your QSL cards from BP6R, Pitcairn Island? I got mine in the mail this week. I also got one from TX17, Marquesas Island, this week. So that was pretty exciting. So DXE is a sponsor for South Orkney. We're providing coax, antenna wire, and a bunch of other things to help them get started. Something that's really cool that I like about some of these big de-expeditions is that they're going to have a Garmin locator so you can track their progress when they set sail and when they arrive there. That's pretty neat. Another big thing coming up, you know, it's never too early to start planning for field day. Got a lot of great things going on. I'm going to be operating with our local PCARS group. You can probably catch me on 40 meters, maybe on 20 meters, and we'll be operating as Kilo 8 Bravo Foxtrot. And then the last thing to talk about today is one of our biggest things going on. It will be our second annual DX Engineering Hamfest, and it will be done in conjunction with the ARRL Ohio Section Convention this year. The August 8th at the Summit Racing Superstore, we're going to have a free flea market on a paved lot, which is pretty exciting. If you're planning on selling in the flea market, we do ask you to pre-register at DXE Hamfest at dxengineering.com. We're going to have forums. We'll have vendors visiting like ICOM, Yaesu, Compact Tenna, Green Heron, Diamond Antenna, and a bunch of others. We'll have our open box specials as we do at most of our in-store events. And, you know, just keep an eye on our Facebook page for more details coming up. That's about it, Amanda.
Great. Well, I do have a couple of questions for you. So about Contest University, about when does that get filled up? So if somebody's on the line about teeter-tottering, well, I might sign up, I shouldn't, maybe, I don't know. When should they sign up by?
Well, you really should sign up as soon as you can. But, you know, Terry is taking registrations up until almost the last day, as long as there's openings. It could fill up fast. You never know.
All right. Well, so I have some questions about you. When did you get licensed? How long ago?
I got licensed about 6 years ago. I worked on the Summit Racing side for 10 years of the company, and they were offering a ham cram. I'm like, this ought to be pretty interesting, you know, learn something new. So I took the ham cram, and that's how I got started in ham radio.
That's great. And do you have some memorable contacts? Maybe your first one, maybe some random one that you didn't think you're going to make, anything like that?
I wouldn't say. I mean, I really enjoy field day. I have a lot of fun with that. The club that we have is, everyone's, you know, very helpful and wants to get you on the air. And once you're on, they won't let you get off.
That's pretty much it. They focus on making those contacts. And, but I got to tell you, that's where I hear that YL voice,
they just want to keep talking.
That's right. And you make a lot more contacts. And field day, I think for a lot of people, any new ham, women or men alike, they get there and they get put on that HF rig and they get hooked and they're like, okay, I'm going to upgrade now. I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to do this for real. And I always think that that's a magical point in people's lives. And I always appreciate that. Valerie, you always love field day too, don't you?
Oh, yeah, because I love camping and I love ham radio, and it combines both of those. I always have a good time at field day. One of my favorite events of the year.
There's always a lot of good food.
Lots of good food. You're right. That's, if you don't have good food at field day, you're not doing field day.
Exactly.
That's all there is to it. Camping, food, and radio.
I tell you a quick story about field day?
Absolutely.
I first got my license, gosh, I don't remember what month, but it, anyway, so I go to my first field day. I just looked online and I found a field day site that actually had showers, because that was a prerequisite. And I really didn't have a field day home. So it was like a good hour and a half north of me. So I just showed up at the Ozaukee County Radio Club at their field day site. And I just introduced myself. I said, hi, I'm so-and-so. Can I join your field day? And they were very welcoming. I didn't know a soul. And I had a blast.
Wow, I can't say enough about that. So I've been to two different kinds of field days. The one where everybody is just in the corner doing CW. And they're not really looking over their shoulder to see who's standing behind them or introduce themselves. And then I have been to the field day where there's actually someone that will take you to each station, introduce you. Yes, they'll interrupt a QSO and make them introduce yourself. And they show you what they're doing on the radio. And I think there's a big difference. And I hope everyone takes note that these memories stick with us forever. And it's very important to do it right in a bunch of ways. It's not just about making contacts, although I do like to make the contacts. It's also about the actual interaction, which is a blast. I'm sure you agree, right, Melanie?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, Mel, thank you so much for being here this evening. We really appreciate it. And it's always nice to put a face to the gal that's in the chat room every week. We really appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, anytime. And guess what? Unfortunately, you've been so great tonight. We're not going to just let you have this one show. We're going to have you on again. Right, Mel?
Oh, darn.
Absolutely.
Well, there you go. Well, thanks so much, Mel, for joining us tonight. I know it's not going to be the last time, so we really appreciate it. And speaking of field day and de-expeditions, we have somebody that actually helps us determine if those are going to be successful or not. Can you believe that? Her name is Dr. Tamitha Scove. Tamitha, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I have a big question when it comes to field day, and I'm always wondering that if the food is so good, does that mean more people do CW? Because I think you can key while you eat and you don't have to worry about getting any mustard on your mic.
Oh, the secret is voice keyers. You just hit the voice keyer while you eat. If you pre-code in all your replies, you pretty much don't have to talk too much.
That's right. You take a bite of the brat. You hit the go again. Choo choo choo. Someone answers you, and you're like, oh, you're far nine. I mean, it's fine. It works out. It's good. It is a lot of fun.
I would expect that there's some statistics that should be done on that. You know, that when it's chow time, the CW goes up a bit, and then when it's not chow time, or if the food isn't as good, then, you know, there's a lot more people on voice. I don't know.
I think we should do a show on recipes, good contesting and field day recipes, because some things you want more finger type food. I cook a lot of finger type food that's easy to eat while you contest. So
yeah,
I should probably do an episode on food.
We've had fun with the taco bar. But anyhow, Tamitha, report when you go to your first field day, because I want to hear about this.
And I will. And you know what I'll do? I'll make sure that I bring tons of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches so that it takes forever for me to.
Hilarious.
I gotta keep it interesting one way or another, right?
Absolutely. Well, what do we got going on this week, sister, for space weather?
Okay. Well, I'm going to start my little sun movie here. And, you know, we're all in luck because we're still sitting at solar minimum, but it's not quite as bad as it has been in the past. You know, we're kind of out of the complete doldrums of solar minimum and moving a little bit more into not really the start of solar cycle 25, but at least we've got a little bit of activity. The nice thing is that this, even though we're only still at marginal range for radio propagation right now, we're not getting down. The solar flux isn't getting back down into the 60s, thank goodness. So what we have right now, this is a almost live image of the sun. Hopefully you can see most of it. You might need to zoom out a little bit, Victor, just so they can see where my bottom of my hand is. Because we've got a coronal hole that is rotating into the Earth strike zone here over the next couple days. And we had just gotten out of having a solar storm. So basically the Earth's shield is still pretty disturbed right now, and any little thing can set it off. And most likely this coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone will do that. Now, if I move to the other side, well, actually, I'll stay on this side for just a second, because what we also have coming in probably about a week, a little bit less than a week, is this coronal hole. This coronal hole will also be sending us some fast solar wind. So as soon as we get done with one small weak solar storm, we'll get another small solar storm with this small coronal hole here. And, you know, so things are going to be a little bit maybe ratty on the Earth's night side. The nice thing, of course, is that you're going to get some decent 6 meter. That should be pretty good. And the gray line should look pretty nice over the next, you know, maybe 2 weeks. And most likely radio propagation is going to stay marginal, not just because we have this region here that's still rotating off of the sun's limb. Whoops, I'm sorry. I'm on a green screen, so I kind of have to watch where I'm pointing here. But we got this region that's rotating off of the sun's west limb right there. But as that one rotates off of the sun's west limb, we have two new regions that are rotating on the sun's east limb. And these two regions are not very bright, and I'll show stereo's far side view in just a second. But these two regions that are rotating into Earth view will continue to keep the solar flux up into the low 70s. So we're looking at probably 70, 71-ish over the next 5 days, which means dayside propagation is going to continue to be marginal. Hey, I know it's not solar max, but at least it's better than the dismal 60s, right? Okay, so if I go now to the far side sun. So those are the two bright regions I was telling you about right here, these two regions. And they are, well, one of them looks like it's fading as of now. And that's new news for me because I had not seen that. So that tells you how new this data is. So it looks like we're only going to have one region that's going to be rotating into Earth view. We do have another one that was kind of looks like a solar cycle 25 bright spot. We're going to be seeing what's going on there. Again, we're still waiting for the new cycle to come in. But at least we still have the chance for some decent radio propagation over the next week and possibly 2 weeks before things really tank. But we are just going to be kind of skirting that hairy edge of marginal for radio propagation. And outside of that, we don't really have any coronal holes or anything on the far side of the sun. So outside of that, we're not going to have much in the way of space weather, which is, you know, for the most part, pretty good news. Now, what I'll do is I'll go to my 5 days. So because we are expecting the fast wind from that coronal hole that I showed you that was in the southern region that's rotating into the Earth strike zone now, NOAA is expecting active conditions, and it should be hitting us probably sometime tomorrow. We have up to about a 40% chance of a major storm, with things beginning to get a little, you know, waning as time goes on. It does look like we might have actually, and I just noticed it while I was doing this broadcast, it looks like we did have a small, maybe solar storm launch. These solar storms, we've been getting them more and more often. But it looks like they're pretty minor thus far. They're usually pretty small and they don't really disturb all that much, but they might cause storming to last a little bit longer. So at least at high latitudes, we could be seeing some storming in through the beginning part of the weekend. Now, mid latitudes, we're only expecting unsettled conditions with up to about a 30% chance of active conditions with that, but that's probably going to fade pretty quickly. So those of you at mid latitudes, you know, here in the United States, you're probably not going to see all that much. As a matter of fact, this solar storm might actually help dayside propagation, because these weak storms, they give us a little extra oomph when it comes to the ionosphere. It gives us a little bit of extra conductivity going on up there. So it makes it, beefs up the layers a little bit. So enjoy that. So yes, we do, even though we do have a few bright regions on the Earth-facing disk, we do still have a spotless sun. So that does mean that we don't have any risk for radio blackouts. You don't have to worry about any of that on Earth's day side. But we do have those bright regions that are keeping the solar flux into the low 70s. We might see it go up to 71. I don't know. With that one bright region fading like that, it may just kind of still hang at the hairy edge of 70. So let's just pray that we can stay in marginal radio propagation here over this next week. And then also, anybody who happens to be flying, just remember, we are at solar minimum, essentially, so cosmic ray flux is a bit more intense than we normally would have. So anybody who's flying transatlantic or flying over the poles for any reason, you are going to be getting a higher dose than you normally would have of radiation. So please take that into consideration in your flight plans. Okay, and that pretty much is the solar forecast for this week.
Well, thank you, Tamitha. I got to ask you,
You're welcome. I'll put the sun back up here.
Oh, we'd love to see the sun. And especially in all of its different colors. Somebody had asked this a long time ago, and you weren't on live, so I couldn't ask you. What's the deal with the different colors? Sometimes it's purple, sometimes brown. Explain it to us.
Sure. Wow, that's a wonderful... And that's not one of the questions you said you were going to ask me.
I could ask you the other question. I couldn't help it.
What are you doing to me? No, I'm kidding. Don't worry. I love it. Because in actuality, I can probably answer that. Hold on a second.
I could ask you the easy question,
I've come prepared.
Are you going to Dayton this year?
You know what? I don't think I am. And there's a twofold reason for that. And I apologize. Well, I guess green screen and white is probably okay for this. I will not be going to Dayton this year, and the reason for that is twofold. One is I usually only go every other year. I think people probably get sick of me if they see me every year. And then the other reason is because I am starting a new broadcast field of broadcast space meteorology. I'm actually teaching people at Millersville University. These are soon to become weather broadcasters, television weather broadcasters, and a couple of them are actually in industry. And I am teaching them how to do space weather broadcasts just the way I do them on the green screen. And hopefully with this, you know, this level of teaching, I'm teaching them how to do it without jargon and teaching them how to do it basically talking to the non-expert and showing them what's important. And believe it or not, ham radio is a huge part of that. So I am teaching these people about the first responders, about auras, about races, and I'm teaching them to pay attention to how space weather affects the first responders' ability to communicate during big disasters, you know, like the Australia fire, like Hurricane Irma and Harvey, for example, back in 2017 when we had a horrible set of solar storms and solar flares with radio bursts that made radio communication almost impossible on Earth's day side. So hopefully within the next, what I'm planning on, my plan is to get space weather broadcasting, credible space weather broadcasting on the television news, your nightly local news, before the next solar maximum hits. That's what I'm striving for. So watch for it. Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm super excited about that. And yes, I did make a wardrobe change. I figured I'm hosting the Oscars here. I'm going to change every other segment. Anyhow, well, go ahead and explain those different colors of the sun and why you use them.
Sure. So you may have to, yeah, hopefully you can see this. So what this is, I'm just going to talk about the bottom. So here's all the different colors. So I actually had a slide that talks about this. And believe it or not, in on the ground, we don't have the capability, and I'm kind of stepping out of the frame, we don't have the capability to see all of these different colors in space, or on the ground. We have to actually go up in space to see this stuff because our atmosphere actually blocks a lot of these frequencies of light. So there's a lot of people out there who honestly, you know, they look at the white light, which is this one, this last one over here. This is what we see on the ground, this yellow sun. You can even see the sunspots in that yellow sun. They actually believe that this is the only color you get and everything else is CGI. But that's because you can't see that stuff from the ground. And when you go up in wave or up in frequency, you're actually going up in temperature. And that's super important because as you go up in temperature on the sun's, you know, in the solar regime, you're actually going higher and higher in altitude. And so when you look at the white light image of the sun with the sunspots over here, you're looking at basically the sun's surface. And that's why you can see the sunspots. It's reasonably cold. If you go slightly higher, so this kind of, you know, ugly green, olive green color sun, you actually see the bright points. All that, you see all that kind of the lighter green color stuff and kind of around the sunspots, you still see the sunspots there, but now there's some light colors around them. Those are the bright points. Those are the regions that actually give you the solar flux. That's so important. It's not sunspots that give us solar flux. It's these bright regions. As we go even higher in energy, this is 304 angstroms. Now we're getting to what's called the transition region. It's called the chromosphere. It's a region that transitions between the solar surface and the solar atmosphere, the corona. And now you see stuff like coronal mass ejections. You see this, which is a solar storm, this little loop you see right here. Okay, that thing I'm kind of pointing to. Sorry, once again, green screen's hard. So you can see that right there. Then when we go higher, now this is the pink sun. This is 211 angstroms. We can now see coronal holes. You can see that little dark hole right there on the kind of right there. Yeah. And as we go even higher, now we're getting into, this is 171 angstroms. This is even higher in the atmosphere. And we can actually see the magnetic field wiggle and shake when these eruptions occur. And we go even higher in energy. And you're getting into seeing what flares do, what all the bright regions are doing, and the hottest plasma that we actually have. And believe it or not, every single one of these images was taken at essentially the same time. Doesn't look like they were taken at the same time, does it? But it's the same sun at the same time. And if you look closely, you can see that loop in 304. If you look closely, you can see a hint of it in 211. And you can see a hint of it in 171. And even more a hint of it in the 131. We look at all these things because all these things tell us something slightly different about the phenomena that we need to study. Because the sun does everything in different layers in its atmosphere. So does that answer your question?
It actually does. And I really honestly thought this was going to be such an easy answer that you're going to be like, because it's with different filters, dummy. thank you. Is it right? Anyone else think that?
In a sense, it is different filters, but the filters themselves are actually different, what we call spectral lines. They're different light sources, light that's being emitted by different atoms, different types of different ions, essentially. So we have calcium, we have iron, and all of these different atoms have different emissions at different temperatures. And so we take advantage of that by looking, because the sun is so bright and it's making all of these atoms glow, and we are able to harness that light and make a full disk image. And so since the imager is only sensitive to, you know, in any one of these spectral lines, it's only sensitive to the brightness of the image, all the images come out gray. So we color code them as scientists because it makes it easier for us to lock into color. So if somebody says, well, what's the pink sun? I go 211 angstroms. Well, what's the bronze sun? I go 193 angstroms. You know, I know what they are just by thinking of the colors. The funny thing is, you would think that we'd standardize all these colors, right? No. So you look at the green sun, or the bluish green sun on SDO, the AIA instrument that we have here. It's not the same frequency or the same, you know, spectral line that we have on Soho, for example. So if you look at the green sun on Soho, it's not the same wavelength. And I wish we'd get it straight, but we don't. You have to know which spacecraft you're looking at to know which color corresponds to what. So not as simple as we'd like to make it seem.
That's almost like having the different charger inputs for each different cell phone. Like, well, we could be on one base, but no. Okay, I just had to simplify it. Sorry. Oh,
that's
great.
Perfect. That's absolutely perfect. And you never have the right adapter.
Never. Ever. What do you think, Val? Did she just blow your mind away?
She did. Can I ask a question? I didn't let you know this beforehand, but hopefully you may know a bit of an answer. But, you know, we always see the 1 week or 2 week or 10 day forecast. When do you think we're going to come out of the cellar of this minimum?
Well, you know, the latest news is, you know, we already are beginning to come out of that cellar. If anybody has checked the solar flux lately, can cheer, because we're no longer sitting at 67 for solar flux. We're hovering in the low 70s typically, and we've even gotten up to about 75 in a couple of occasions. We are also beginning to see solar storms being launched again, which is nice. It's not just solar storms from fast solar wind, which is wonderful. So the sun is slowly but surely waking up. We also are routinely seeing bright regions on that are from solar cycle 25. The sunspots and the bright regions have a particular magnetic polarity, and they have a signature. And that signature reverses every 11 years, depending upon which hemisphere you're in. So we can tell the old region sunspots from the new region sunspots, not only by where their location is on the sun, but also by their magnetic polarity. It's very, very clear. So the sun is telegraphing to us that it's making these solar cycle 25 bright regions emerge a lot more frequently. And that tells us that we are coming out of the solar minimum, albeit slowly. So right now, it looks like, from the latest data, it looks like spring of this year is when we're going to start really seeing things light up and get faster. We're going to cross something called a terminator. And as soon as that happens, the solar cycle activity just really shoots up like 100% in just a few months. But it could be that we have to wait till summer. It's really hard to tell. And unfortunately, when you look at past cycles, it seems like the scientists know what they're doing. But to be honest, the way it's historically done, when you decide where solar minimum is, it's always done retroactively. So the scientists go 2 years oftentimes into the new cycle before they go back and they go, oh, there's solar minimum. It's right there. See, it's perfect. We got it. We know where it is. It's right there. But people don't realize when they look at the historical record that it took us 2 years past that point to realize, you know, to actually definitively say this is where solar minimum was. So we may have to wait a little bit longer.
Well, spring, summer, I'll take it. I was thinking years, so I'm glad we're starting to come out.
Me too, sisters.
Yeah, it's closer than you think.
Good.
I'll take
and
that.
And no grand minima. No grand minima. You don't have to worry about the grand minimum. We're not going into a Maunder minimum. Sunspots are not going away. You know, dogs and cats are not going to be, you know, raining down from heaven. It's everything's fine. The sun's doing what it's supposed to do.
Very good. Well, Tamitha, I have some, you know, just some personal questions for you. I really have to know, who influenced you to get into science and technology and, over that space weather?
As far as what got me to get involved in science and be interested in science, that story really, you know, I honestly don't even know. I mean, I was really interested in Star Trek. I loved science fiction and fantasy, and I read a lot of novels from people like Isaac Asimov and Jules Verne and Arthur C. Clarke and Dan Simmons. I could go on and on about all the books I've read. But then at some point, I ended up having to take some rudimentary chemistry and physics classes, and I started realizing that the truth was actually cool. These mathematicians and physicists were able to see into a world that even the most psychologically, you know, perpendicular people couldn't, you know, for sci-fi novels couldn't write. They couldn't see into that world nearly like what these physicists did. So I put down books, you know, sci-fi books, and picked up textbooks and got into that. And that's how kind of I got into science. But space was always a love of mine. And then I think I got lucky, because when I went to UCLA as an undergraduate, I was double majoring in chemistry and physics. I wasn't sure where I was going to go, and I needed a job. So I got involved with a space scientist named Dr. And I worked with him for a few years on things like Mars and Halley's Comet, and it was really kind of cool. And I got to know a couple of the grad students, and it just so happened that when I was graduating as an undergraduate, another graduate student named Gretchen Lindsay was leaving, and she had studied the sun. And at that time, we didn't even have SDO up yet, so these images that you see behind me didn't even exist. We didn't have images that were nearly that good, but we had SOHO, and we had YOKO, and we had some really cool ideas of what the solar disk looked like with these X-ray images and stuff, and it was just fascinating and beautiful. And I also was an artist, so I was mesmerized by the eye candy. And when Gretchen graduated, Chris then came up to me and said, you know, I've already taught you so much as an undergraduate. Please stay. I will fund you to be a grad student of mine. Just please stay. And I said, okay, I'll be your grad student. I said, under one condition. He says, what? I said, I want her job. Because Gretchen was leaving and he had no one to study the sun. And so he said, it's yours. And that's how it happened.
Wow, what an inspiring story. By the way, my nephew goes to UCLA. Love that school. Just toured it in December. Beautiful. You had a great education. My only other question for you is, I'm guessing that you get to talk to youth and a lot of young ladies. And what do you do? What do you say to them when they're talking about going into some of these career paths or some of this college education? How do you encourage them?
Wow. That's tough. I encourage them honestly by telling them the truth. Girls have it tough. There's no doubt. We are pioneers. And I could bore you with the stories I've had of how many times that I've been tried, that people have tried to chase me out of my field. I even have a story of my boss trying to get me fired by making up stories to try to scare me into compliance and being a piece of furniture, for lack of a better term. And unfortunately, a lot of girls get that. And so really what I tell them is that if they really want to pursue any type of career in fields like this, in the hard sciences, they have to understand that it's going to be their passion for the field that keeps them there. If they're doing it for any other reason, then they're probably going to leave it. Women, and I don't mean to bring people down a little bit, but women have a much harder road. They have to work 2 to 3 to 4 times as hard as their male counterparts to even be considered half as good. And if anybody doesn't believe that, then just take a look at the Nobel Prizes and the Nobel nominations for women relative to men, and see how many times women have been nominated and never received a Nobel Prize. And it's, if you go and do the statistics, I think women have to be something like 3 times as good as Tesla, 4 times as good as Feynman, and 80% as good as Einstein in order to even be nominated for a Nobel Prize. And so it's tough. It's tough. And if women, young women, go in to the field understanding that they're not probably going to get the kudos that the men get, but that doesn't mean that they're not as capable and as brilliant as their male colleagues are. If they're able to internalize that and keep that with them and keep it in their heart, then they're able to succeed and they're able to excel and they're able to set the bar higher for all women who then follow. And that's really, I think, what the biggest push is for me, is to have more women see that they can absolutely do it, but they have to do it for different reasons. They have to do it for themselves, because otherwise they'll get discouraged. So Hopefully that's a bit of an honest answer, but that's the way it is.
I love the answer, by the way. So did Nisi. She said, preach, Dr. T, preach. So thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad.
I'm with you. Yes, thank you. And we do. I wouldn't say that's over the board on every hobby or any career, but I would say it's in a lot of them. So thank you for bringing that to us. And thank you for a very honest answer. And I really enjoyed it. Well, thank you so much, Tamitha, for being here tonight. We really appreciate you joining us live, no less. Valerie, you want to say goodbye to Tamitha?
Yeah, thank you. And keep the fight up. You're doing a great job and you represent women so well. And you represent our show so well. And we really appreciate you coming on this show and just really bringing it to the next level.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
You have most hams sitting in the corner eating crayons, as Don would say, and he would say that. But we're so pleased to have you here, and you blow us away every week, so we appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so honored to be part of the Ham Nation family. I can't thank you guys enough. You've just always opened me or accepted me with open arms, even though I'm not on the bands yet. I know. I'm surprised you guys didn't ask me that. When are you planning on getting on the bands? Soon.
you have more important business than to just get on the air and talk, because if you did, you wouldn't have time to get this work done where you're working to help us when we know when we can get on the band. So, you know, it's push come to shove. You got to do one or the other sometimes. So, well, we appreciate it, Tamitha. Thanks for being here tonight. And we'll say 73 and 88 and 33. All right. Well, we have some other special guests here this evening. This lady, she just kind of got shoved into her job as well. And I'm not going to lie, she actually had to prove that she was better than some men too to take this over. And without further ado, I'd love to introduce Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, with Amateur Radio Newsline. Good evening, Karen.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, well, I'm doing great.
Amanda?
Thank you for sitting in the sidelines there waiting to come on. We really appreciate it. And we love having you on here. So you have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. But first of all, we're going to talk about Amateur Radio Newsline and how you got involved. So give us that story.
Okay. I didn't ask for the job. What I thought was going to happen was I was going to be Bill Pasternak's assistant. He was ill in the spring of 2015. I think a lot of us remember that. There was a posting on Facebook, of all places, where Skeeter Nash and 5ASH put out a call for somebody to assist something called Amateur Radio Newsline. And I said, what's that? I didn't know what that was. I was a brand new ticket. I just got my license, I would say, 8 months earlier. So I hadn't really been on the bands all that much. But my background is in newspapering, and I like radio. I like newspapering. I like news. So if I could help out, if I could help Bill, who I'd never met, put my name in the hat and wait to see what would happen. And no one ever got back to me because of circumstances. And I just said, okay, you know, it's all right. I'll move on, because things were going on behind the scenes I didn't know about. And I wanted to help, but I figured they would find me if they needed me. Unfortunately, they needed me. Bill passed away, and they needed me to jump in and write the report. And, oh my God, I said, I don't know anything about any of this. I have no history. I literally went in cold and didn't know what to do. But let me tell you something. You know this. You guys both know this. What a team we have. What an incredible team we have, because they pretty much walked me through it and helped me through the first couple of newscasts. And it was hit or miss for quite a while. We found our footing, and We stumbled here, we stumbled there, then we started walking, then we started trotting, and pretty soon we were going full steam ahead. I'd like to say I have not and never will believe that anybody could replace Bill. And I don't think we're trying to do that, but what we are doing is carrying on his dream and carrying on his tradition, and I hope, I truly hope he would be proud of what we've done. Bill is someone I would have liked to have worked with. He's somebody I could have learned so much from. A fellow New Yorker, Brooklyn native from everything I have heard, animal lover. Bill had a lot to give. Not long after Skeeter and I chatted, I got a phone call from Don. And Don gave me the wonderful gift of getting to know Bill through his eyes. He told me some great stories about the adventures of Bill. And it was great. We heard about Bill at Hamvention and all of the get-togethers, Bill singing Broadway show tunes and the friendships he made along the way. And how much he was missed. It was really very, very touching, and I was deeply affected by the importance of what we were doing now as a team to take Bill's vision and move it forward. So in that vein, I'd like to say something else that's going to be happening very soon that is just fantastic. And I was hanging on every word that Dr. T was just speaking, because I was hoping through some miracle we were going to have spectacular solar weather this weekend. This is a big deal, what's going on this weekend. Amateur Radio News Lines Amateur Radio Club is having its first special event this Friday, launching it on Bill's, what would have been Bill's birthday, and right through the weekend. And we want people to listen for us. We're going to be on every single mode, and that includes digital. We're going to be calling QRZ, and we encourage people to contact everyone on our staff. That would include past and present. And say hello. Tell your Bill stories. Talk to us about Bill. Tell us what you like about Newsline. Tell us what you don't like about Newsline. Tell us whatever you want to. And remember Bill with us. Even those of us who may not have met him, and I'm one of those, but I've gotten to know him through so many people. So our weekend will be a great time on the air, and we're looking forward to it. We'd like everyone watching tonight and everybody catching up on this later on podcast to listen for WA6ITF, now the call sign of Amateur Radio Newsline, the Amateur Radio Club, and give us a shout. Get in our logbook. So that's where we're at. That brings us pretty much up to date, and we're very happy to be sharing this with you guys.
Thank you so much, Karen. I started getting weepy-eyed. Don had showed me all of these photos of Bill, and he said, I put this all in Dropbox, and it's ready for you to look at. Put some on his QSL card, which I just designed your guys' QSL card, which was amazing. And just going through the photos, it made me teary-eyed. I loved Bill so much. And again, I'm one of those, I never really personally met him, but he used to do the amateur radio news line for Ham Nation. Those that have been watching long enough know that he always had the intro. It was his voice, and he always watched Ham Nation. And one day he reached out and he said, Has anyone ever helped you get your broadcast and personality together for these kind of on-air things? I said, no. And he's like, why don't I help you? So I said, okay. And from there, our relationship blossomed fully. He was just such a great mentor. And he talked about all of these RCA microphones, the ribbon microphones that he used to use, still used, and his love for photography was another that he just sparked. He sparked so many people into amateur radio. I really look forward to this weekend and honoring him and working everybody that is working as WA6ITF. And Bill's going to be one of those that none of us ever forget if he ever touched our lives. And I know, Don Wilbanks has been banned from the show tonight, but I know that he would have some really wonderful things to say about him. And
if you can read this.
Oh, we've got that I'm not Wilbanks pin going on here. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all remember that from Dayton. And yes, that's awesome. So, Karen, you've kind of been pushed into this position of being an Elmer and someone looked at from others. So when you meet all these women at Hamfest and at Dayton and things like that, what do you tell them, and how are you influencing them to be a part of ham radio?
I harass them. I pretty much harass them. I say to them, do it. Just do it. When I was about 12, I wanted to get my novice, and I learned code, and then I got the book, and I began studying theory, and then I made a stupid mistake. I said, I'm a 12-year-old girl. What am I doing this for? And that was so wrong, because I missed out so many years, so many decades of being able to get on the radio. And I tell them, if this interests you, just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Val, do you
get out there.
Do you have any questions for Karen?
No, I'm just great that you were able to be on the show tonight. I never got to meet Bill Pasternak. I was never on the show when he was on the show, I don't believe. But I always listened to Amateur Radio Newsline well before I even knew about this show. That and the Rain Report, those were the two things I would listen to all the time. So thank you so much for, you know, kind of setting the pathway for some of us other YLs to get in the hobby.
Absolutely. The other question is fantastic. Well, and you do such a wonderful job. I think that we've seen the transition of AR Newsline, and it's more visual now as well. You guys add a lot more video and snapshots and things to it, and I can't say enough for that. We really appreciate that. I do have to ask you, what got you into amateur radio? I mean, other than you were 12, I mean, was nobody forced you? Nobody told you? One of my friends, actually, he told his 12-year-old daughter, you can get a cell phone if you get your amateur radio license. So I'm just wondering, you just wanted to do it, right?
Well, yeah. When I was 12, we still had dial phones. We didn't have crank phones, but we did have dial phones. We did have telephones. No, I grew up with a ham in the family. My older brother was a ham, and he and his friends always seemed to have so much fun. And that was really why I wanted to go for my novice, but I got distracted. So fast forward to modern times here, fast forward to 2015. And my brother was reactivating his license where he lives down in Maryland. And I had just still had the fresh memory of Superstorm Sandy when we were without power personally at our home for 14 days. And I thought to myself, we had no communication. We had nothing whatsoever. And gee, wouldn't it have been nice if I had been a ham radio operator? I might have been useful. might have been able to talk to people, might have felt less cut off. And so in a matter of a couple of weeks, I found myself at the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club in Lindenhurst, taking my technician's test after really just crashing my studies for a couple of weeks. I was walking around with a book in my face. Nobody, I was stumbling into a lot of people because I couldn't see in front of me. I had this book in my face and I was studying and studying and studying. And I got my technician test done and they congratulated me and said, "Great, now we're going to make fun of you until you get your general." Well, we couldn't have that. So, of course, I walked around with another book in front of my face for a couple of weeks, crashing into probably the same things that I crashed into a few weeks earlier when I had the book in front of my face for the technician test, and sat for that test, got my general. I haven't crashed into too many more things because I have not yet begun studying for my extra. That hopefully will be this year, but my bruises have healed from all that crashing into things, so it's time to get back to my studies and do that. And each time I try to do something new every year, this year it was exploring the AM side of things. I tried out the AM rally a year and a half ago. I tried DMR and still do some DMR. So there's so much to this hobby that I'll probably be pretty old and in the quarter century club by the time there's nothing left to do in ham radio, although I believe there will always be something left to do in ham radio. So
I was going to say the same thing. I think that we're always going to learn something new. At one point in time, it was JT65. Then it became, now it's FT8. So there's always going to be something new. Well, Karen, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We really appreciate it. It's been a long time coming for having you on here. And you've replaced Don in much better. Don't we all agree, everyone? Yes.
I couldn't grow a beard in time for the show. I would have wanted to at least, and I don't own a kilt. So I'm doing the best I can, but it's... The beard was just not going to happen, and I don't like my face to itch.
She tried so hard too. I mean, we've been talking for like 6 months. Mm-hmm. There you are. I'm not Will Banks.
There it is. You know what? The other thing is the cigars. What it did to my breath was just didn't work.
There's that.
Just didn't.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and let you. You have the introduction for AIR Newsline tonight, so I'm gonna let ahead and take that away. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. It's been a pleasure, and thanks for having me here tonight. Without further delay, let's go to this week's headlines on Amateur Radio Newsline for Ham Nation.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2205, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. We begin with the earthquake that rattled Turkey Friday, January 24th. Local hams played an important role.
Buildings collapsed, people ran for cover, and rescue efforts got underway following the earthquake, even as aftershocks began to strike in eastern Turkey. Although no foreign assistance was immediately called in to aid in the disaster, hams made sure communications was not hampered. According to Aziz Sasa, TA1E, who was involved in a telecommunications service group solution partner in the National Emergency Response Plan. Aziz told Newsline in an email that amateurs conducted tactical communications in the affected area and supported the Ministry of Health. They installed a repeater on one of the mountaintops and got it operational. Aziz noted that there was no need at the time for any immediate deployment from Region 1 of the International Amateur Radio Union. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
No Smoker Solder was involved in a project two of the hams undertook on board the International Space Station, except, of course, they weren't exactly on board at the time.
So you think you face challenges on a crowded bench where it's hard to work on projects in an organized manner? Consider the task that recently faced Andrew Morgan, KI5AAA, and Luca Parmitano, KF5KDP. They had all the room in the world, well, beyond the world, actually, because they were spacewalking as they worked. These two astronauts were partners on Saturday, January 25th, as they plugged a leak in a coolant line of the cosmic ray detector outside the International Space Station. This wasn't your typical homebrew project. The Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer is a $2 billion device. Of course, Andrew and Luca aren't your typical hams. Their QTH for now is the International Space Station, where they've also been engaging in QSOs back home on Earth as part of amateur radio on the International Space Station. The spectrometer has a job to do, too, out there in space. Its mission is to find antimatter and dark matter. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
Finally this week, we want to let you know about an event that's very close to our hearts, and in this case, our radios.
Happy birthday, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. Bill created the original amateur radio newsline as the Westlink Radio Network long before many of us were hams, although there are just as many who already had their license who may remember listening to his reports. Bill became a silent key 5 years ago. He would have been 72 years old on Friday, February 7th. On that day and into the weekend, the Amateur Radio Newsline Amateur Radio Club is planning its first activation of WA6ITF, which has become our club call sign. This is an informal activation. Be listening for any and all of the Newsline staffers on the HF bands, as well as DMR, D-Star, Fusion, and Echolink. We'll be spotting on DX Summit to help you find us. What a great gift of communication for all of us. Remembering and celebrating Bill.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers in a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo, or just over 2 pounds. With RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz, 5-volt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, and live band scope with waterfall, integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro SD card for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRPP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
You know what? That IC705, for all you preppers out there, that would be really good for a bug-out bag. All right, we're getting close, guys, I promise. But now it's time for Smoke and Solder, and it's not with George. It's with Jerry and Amy. So welcome aboard, Jerry and Amy.
Hi, guys. Hey, we were just drooling over that 705. Holy cow. Yeah.
Isn't that great? I love the backpack idea. This is great. Hey, I heard you guys went to Quartz Fest. Are you going to be talking about that tonight?
Sure, yeah. We'd love to tell you about all our right. Shenanigans.
Shenanigans is accurate.
Yeah, I want to hear what the fire starter was this week.
Oh, talk about the starting the fires, Amy.
Oh, yeah. So last year we had this crazy 1-watt laser of Jerry's that we pulled out, and we tried to start the fire with it, and we weren't very successful. But we decided that this year we would try to start the campfire in a different way every single night. So First night, we used potassium permanganate and vegetable glycerin, which is actually quite fun to do. But if you do it, be careful, kids. Don't hurt yourself. Second night, we did an actual flint stone and actual iron, like a piece of metal. And then I think the next night we did, I'm trying to remember, I think we did the 9-volt battery and steel wool. But the 9-volt battery wasn't good enough for the steel wool we had, so Jerry pulled out the LiFePO4 battery and
I did it real quick.
Got it going really fast. What other ways do we do it? Oh, the finale night was the 1-watt lasers. So the other guys in the camp that we were staying at ended up getting 1-watt lasers as well. And we had, I think, 3 of them or 4 of them going at the same time and ended up starting the guys that we camped with there. So we ended up getting the fire going with 1-watt lasers, another don't try this at home, kids. But it was fun.
To add a little correction to it, they were showing pictures of the main camp ring. That was actually, we were starting the fire at Randy K7AGE's campsite.
That's right.
Every night. It was super fun. But it was amazing week out there.
Did you guys do any presenting there, or did you guys go to a lot of the seminars, or what was all involved with going to Quartzite Fest?
So this year, I think this year was the year of YouTubers. There's Jerry. So a bunch of YouTubers were there, including Jerry, Kevin Laughlin, KB9RLW, Bob, K6UDA, Randy, of course, K7AGE, and Dave Kessler, KE0OG. And they gave a talk while we were there, which was pretty fun.
It was super fun. We spent a lot of time talking about what is behind doing a YouTube channel. And so I found it kind of interesting to see the other ham radio YouTubers talking about their trials and tribulations of dealing with the internet.
Very good. I'm going to bring Amanda in now because I'm sure she has a lot more questions for you. Amanda, are you available?
I am. Actually, I have. So I really want to, for any of us that don't know, what is the definition of a YouTuber and how do you make it or break it?
Make it or break it. I don't know. I got started in YouTube a very long time ago before YouTube was much of a thing. I was working at a company that did video encoding. They did the TriCaster, which is likely doing the live stream today. And I just wanted to learn about video streaming and this thing called YouTube. So, you know, since I'm into electronics, I just got a bunch of people together, my friends, and we did live streaming and recording YouTube videos just around science and technology. And it kind of took off. And eventually, for me, I really felt that this was a great way for me to give back to like all the mentors that helped me over the years. So I've continued to do it for quite some time. And recently, when I got licensed as a ham radio operator, I started doing ham radio related activities on YouTube. For the other folks that were on the panel, they had various other reasons. Bob, K6UDA, for example, he just had aspirations of being kind of a amateur filmmaker. And so taking his passion for film and applying radio to it gave him like an outlet to practice. If I remember right, Dave Kessler had been making videos of his motorcycle, and then he just decided to throw up a couple videos, and then it just kind of spiraled out of control.
Wow. And Randy really has a great YouTube channel, by the way, K7AGE, if none of you guys know who he is. And Val does a lot of YouTube videos. We really appreciate them. She has a lot of instructional on how to get involved in anything from LOTW. Val, don't you? I mean, you do a lot of that, actually.
Yeah, well, it's usually whatever I throw on the show, I put on my YouTube channel, too, just in case you just want to see that segment. But I wouldn't really be what you call a YouTuber. I finally passed that 1,000 mark, although I'm not going to monetize. I hate watching commercials, so I don't want anybody out there wanting to learn ham radio to have to sit through them, too. But how many subscribers would you say you have, Jerry? And if someone were to go to your channel, what kind of things would they see besides ham radio?
I really don't know how many subscribers I have, 250,000 or something like that.
No, I think it's, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Maybe it's 10. I don't know.
That's it.
That's a lot.
I don't, you know, for... you know, for some folks, it's all about the numbers. For me, it's an outlet and ability for me to mentor. So I don't really follow all the stats that closely. And I really don't care whether people like me or not on there. It's kind of funny. Some of my videos that get the most hate are things like I hiked out to a lava flow in Hawaii with a metal shovel and just started shoveling lava and manipulating it. And, people.
And that got hate?
Yeah. I don't know why. And it's, I just go on there occasionally and go, LOL.
That's really bizarre. You guys that watch YouTube are really bizarre. I'm kidding.
I think it's funny because I do on my channel, I do everything from art to electronics, and you just can't please everyone. So I'll do some kind of art project and put up there, and people will be like, I hate you so much, I'm unsubscribing. And then all the people that are into the art stuff are like, you're the best ever.
That is so bizarre. Okay. Let's see. We do have some other questions. So the last time you actually were on Ham Nation, you two were talking about Tilt 5, your startup project. And I think you've actually progressed quite a bit since you've been on the show. How's it going?
That's going really good. We just did an announcement today that we're heads deep in manufacturing, and which is super exciting. And Amy, do you have...
It's just we've been insanely busy. Couple new staff members on board in December, and we're actually this week right in the midst of moving to a new office because our other space was so cramped with five of us in there. But we needed to get a larger space finally.
Yeah, it's kind of fun too. With the coronavirus. Becoming an issue. Now we're kind of looking around like, well, how are we going to get all the parts to do this next build? So that's kind of interesting and fun. Luckily, before all that hit, we had a large shipment of bits and pieces for us to progress. So far, it's not looking too bad. But it's always interesting in a startup, trying to navigate all the unexpected stuff.
Now, that's interesting that you bring that up. So that's one aspect of the coronavirus I would have never expected, is that it's hindering shipping and manufacturing completely.
We paid lots and lots of money to have 3,000 subassemblies built a bit over a month ago, and they were scheduled to build right after the Chinese New Year, which was this last Monday. And so we've been in constant communication with them, like, so what's going on? They're like, well, we're forced to do an extended vacation. We don't know when it's going to end. So, again, luckily we had gotten some trial runs in before like the big build was going to happen, so we can keep progressing.
Now, I have this random thing, and this comes from you, Jerry. This is your fault because I follow you on Twitter. you had mentioned something about rockets, and you brought back my childhood memory as well from Estes rockets. And you said, this is great. And then I used to launch all these Estes rockets. I just wanted to let you know, it's funny. I do printing for Estes rockets, and they're about 10 minutes away from me. And I used to get a lot of their early models because my dad did their printing before I started in the business with him. And I enjoyed them so much. And again, it's something that you think is kind of a boy thing, where the rocket club is all guys. And it was just really neat to see you tweeting about it, because it brought back a lot of childhood memories. And thank you so much. And having all the different paints to paint them. And you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I think you're the best ever that you did Estes rockets. I've always been interested in space. So, when I was a kid, of course, you build model rockets, and I actually burned 2 acres of grass in our cow pasture launching rockets, which is a whole long story. Got in trouble for that. Got kicked out of my rocketry club for building too high power of rockets, and whatever, And a few years ago, before I started the AR startup,
I was approached to work on a navigation system for a rocket and a low Earth orbit rocket. And so it was like, wow, like dream come true. And so I jumped in and built these flight computers for this rocket. And just this week, they came out of stealth mode as far as the company, and they start talking about it. So now I can talk about it. And that's why I was on Twitter saying, like, oh, my God, I can finally talk about this rocket, which they've launched a few times. It had my flight computers in it. And this is so amazing. And thanks to ham radio, I was able to do all of the radios and telemetry for it as well. So and when things went horribly wrong the first time we turned on the radios, I quickly looked at the spectrum analyzer. I'm like, oh, I know what's going on. We just have, mixing products, like we can fix this.
Wow, that's amazing. Yes, the rockets in general, it was always a fun time. It didn't start anything on fire, though, thank goodness, here in Colorado. That could be very, very dangerous. But
when they were launching the big rocket, they launched it out of, I think this is public, out of Alaska. And I got to watch a live stream. So I was super nervous because, like, this thing would go off like a megaton bomb if something went wrong. And it could be my fault, right, if the navigation system didn't work right. So super nerve-wracking watching these rockets launch, especially, this little startup that I was at was super small. It was, I don't know, I think it was less than 50 people in the entire company building these low-Earth orbit rockets. And so, there was a lot of trust put into my hands to build these computers and design them correctly. So, knock on wood, a couple flights in so far, no problems.
Yeah, you're doing better than SpaceX. should I have not have said that? Okay. I did want to just say one other thing, and I don't think that Jerry is ever going to brag about herself, so I have to brag for her. Don't mind me, Jerry. There was this wonderful New York Times article, and I hope everyone just Googles Jerry Ellsworth and New York Times and sees this article, because it was really spectacular to talk about where you came from, your education, and basically the way you got bored with the education you were given. And you just kept moving on and moving on and moving on. And I would say that you're a huge inspiration to not only women, but everybody when they can't get what they're looking for. Victor, I can't believe you found that. It's really a superb article, and I hope everybody takes the time to read it.
Thank you so much. This is actually, the second New York Times article. It was... and I am going to brag, I guess.
But you should, sister, you should.
The first New York Times article was in 2004, I believe. It was kind of the first thing that I did that was kind of like public and big. I designed a toy, and this reporter discovered me, and he's like, wow, this is such an interesting story. A high school dropout, race car driver turned toy designer, ships a million units, and that was really interesting. It was like before social media. It was before, a lot of this stuff. And just a lot of strange things happened. Like people so desperate to talk to me that were actually they found my father and they called my father up and kind of freaked my dad out. So, but luckily, the second New York Times article was, people could find me a lot easier. Yeah, oh, there it is. Toy with a story. Yeah, that was a super magical project that I worked on.
I loved reading this story, and I love the way that they put it together. Love the pictures. Everything about it was really inspiring. And I'm not saying that most people shouldn't go to college, finish it, get your degree, but Jerry has a very unique story, and we really appreciate it. And with
stay
your
in
unique
kids, or stay in school,
stay,
kids.
Yeah, stay in school.
the two of you are so great, and you're so dynamic. I just and I don't know if you have different answers for this or kind of a joint answer, but I'm sure you get the chance to talk to a lot of youth about STEAM and if they're looking at it, what they look to get into it. What do you do to encourage them?
You know, Dr. T kind of hit the nail on the head with that one. I was actually, I really, really, really liked her answer. I've had the same thing happen in my
past where I've been discouraged a number of times. And I think she hit it on the head when she said, you really have to have that passion for the thing that you're working on, because that's the thing that's going to pull you through all of those other things. So all of the people that try to dissuade you or push you out of that career path, if you're very, very passionate about it, you're going to keep working towards it and you're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah, I think that's a great message. It's all in my career, it's been about the passion. And so, you know, maybe to add on to that is like your passions change over time.
Yep.
So, and they can be very fleeting. Like my chance to work on a rocket, that was amazing. I put 5 months really hard work into it, and I'll never do it again because I never want to go through that again. But it was my passion pushed me through this like tight schedule to get it done. And I think probably one of the things that maybe creeps me out the most about our education system is that there's this push for kids to figure out what they're going to do for their entire life when they're 15 years old. And I think that's completely wrong. I've been a race car driver. I've owned retail computer stores. I'm an electrical engineer. I'm a CEO now. So it's it changes.
So don't just make one decision right now. I mean, that's very good advice, first of all, and to explore your options. Thank you so much, ladies, for being here. We always enjoy you so much in our...
Can I tell a funny quartzite story before we jump off
here?
Oh,
wait. I did hear that there might have been some shenanigans that we all need to hear about. So
I think this is important just in case Ray from ICOM is listening.
Oh.
Do you want to tell Amy?
Oh, yeah. So Ray was camped kind of right near where we were camped. And we always enjoy hanging out and kind of ribbing Ray a little bit when we're there. And so we had our mini bikes. There might be a picture of Jerry working on a transceiver one day with them. Yeah, there you go, with the mini bikes there. So those are little mini bikes that have lawnmower engines in them, and they can be pretty loud. So one night after some prodding by the guys that we were camping with to...
Maybe a little inebriation.
Yeah, a few drinks probably in at this point. The guys convinced us we should go and race around... Ray's big RV, and so it was probably about 9:30 at night or so. It was the first night, and we went around and did circles around his RV and revved the engine, and I think he was still awake, actually, we found out later. But Dave Kessler happened to be in the campsite kind of right next to Ray, and he came out. I think he was out there with a flashlight aiming it at us that night, and later we found out he wasn't very pleased.
But he came up to me afterwards. He's like, "That was you? That was quite late at night." I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. Well, we won't do that again." And guess what happened Saturday night?
We should apologize to Dave.
Yeah, we did it again Saturday night. Sorry, Dave.
We couldn't stop ourselves. But we had some fun back and forth between Ray for quite a few nights while we were there. He would wake up super early in the morning, and we tend to sleep in really late. So he'd come around at like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning and start shaking the RV.
and I mean, even with all of the harassment that we were doing to Ray, he was still willing to walk me through my new 7610.
That's right.
And teach me how to use it. So thank you, Ray. We'll be a little nicer next time. Maybe.
Maybe. We do it because we love him.
Absolutely. And I know that Ray is like a go to bed early kind of guy. I get that because I see his posts on Facebook where he's up at the gym at like 5 a.m. and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
So I understand he's probably like that camping as well. We love you, Ray. We do. but I'm with you. Stay up late, sleep in. Up late, that's where it's more productive. Sleep in. So
yes,
that's right.
It sounds like it was a really fun time. By the way, that's like 9:30. That's not even against KOA's rules. So you're fine.
Exactly.
You're fine.
Saturday night, it could have been a little later and likely was.
Maybe. I don't know. It was hard to tell after having a bit of that cinnamon whiskey.
Oh, yeah, there's fireball. A lot of fun things to do at Quartzsite. I highly recommend everyone go to Quartzsite. It's a phenomenal week long. We had Gordon West in our camp constantly.
Oh, that's our buddy Bobby there.
What is he holding?
So he's got a converted news van, and that was his really big pneumatic
mask.
Okay. Yeah, and so he had a leak in the seal, and so we decided, well, heck, you know, part of the fun of being at Quartz Fest is doing these projects. And so we, Jerry and I chipped in to help him take it apart and so he could get it all fixed up and reassemble it.
So that's on top of a big news van. That was super sketch up there. I was a little scared lifting that like 100-pound mast out.
I know. We have one of those news vans, by the way. We had one donated to us, but it doesn't have the telescoping mask.
And there's Gordo. We love seeing him at Quartzsite.
Gordo is like the man about town. Like you go everywhere at Quartzsite and there he is.
Yep.
You know, he's over, probably scamming food. It looks
I think he does the rounds at night. So, so as soon as he'd start smelling that cobbler I was making, he'd swing around.
And the Burning Ham Man, which you were asking about, like, why do people get super upset about things on YouTube? Apparently, whenever they show the Burning Ham Man on YouTube, yeah, people get really upset about it. I think it's quite fun. And
I think, like, it's hilarious. You
got to have a little danger in your life. Like,
wow. The people are upset about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, there's, Jerry is the Quartzsite queen of the Jiffy Pop.
I've mastered it. She's like, everyone's like, you can't make Jiffy Pop work. And I'm like, I can do it. And so I have a technique.
What do they like, burn it or it just doesn't pop?
Yeah, burn it. They burn it every time.
I think they burn it. Yeah.
Oh,
but she's got it down.
I can't reveal my secret. You have to come to Quartzsite to observe it.
That's right.
So it's Quartzsite or possibly a secret YouTube video. We don't know yet, but we'll find out.
Right.
Sounds good.
Ladies, you have been so much fun tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. We've really enjoyed you on Ladies Night. And Val, did you want to say anything else?
I just want to say thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure to have you guys on the show. And one of these years, I'm going to get to Quartzsite Fest, and hopefully I'll see you guys there.
Yay, we would love to see you there.
Yes,
that'd be great.
We have a camper now. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
Our Make first your way year down being to Quartzsite Fest and join us.
A first year camper owner. So we're like nervous parents about everything we do. And, you know, the backing up causes a divorce and, you know, all that stuff. But we're getting there. We're getting there.
You just have get your first dent.
All right. 2021, we expect to see you there.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't see a lot of trees there. So we don't have to worry about running underneath the branches or anything. Thank you, ladies. I do have one other thing. I only get a smidgen of time for myself on this show. I know it's horrible. I wanted to talk about this wonderful lady, Laura, K6MIX, who I visited at Last Man Standing. She's brilliant. First of all, she's the mixer for Last Man Standing, hence her call sign. And we only got about maybe 5 minutes of time with her when we were at the studio, because she was working, but I did manage to get her to say hello to us. So, Victor, if you wouldn't mind playing that real quick, like, I'd appreciate it.
I'm Laura King, K6MIX from the set of Last Man Standing.
And she's so brilliant. Here she was. She was describing all of the sound that they just upgraded to a digital mixer this year. And she's talking about how she can hear different sounds and the digital isn't so great. And we talked about the difference between, my husband can't hear anything. So I'm like, do you hear that buzzing noise? And he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And she was the same way. It was really interesting. It was a really great conversation. Thank you so much, Laura, for taking the time out, for saying hello to all of us. And with that, we got to wrap it up because we've gone so over time. I don't even know. Victor is probably ready to go retire by now. So with that, let's go around the horn here. Karen, thank you so much for joining us tonight. You were such a pleasure and we hope to see you on again sometime.
Thanks for the nice welcome and thanks for supporting Amateur Radio Newsline as you do. One of my friends just popped in. Wanted to say hi. I threatened to bring one of them in. This one's safe. But thank you. Thank you so much for being a great hostess. And let's do YL show more often.
We definitely should. And if nobody knows, Carol is a huge Karen is a huge squirrel saver and humanitarian for animals all around. So thank you, Karen, for everything you do. We appreciate it. Amy and Jerry, anything else before we wrap it up here?
Thank you for having us. It was so much fun being on. Thanks. We'd definitely do this again.
Thank you. Val, anything?
No, I mean, I think this was a great show, even though we went long. I think it was full of lots of great information, thanks to some excellent YLs out there. And, yeah, we need to do this a little more soon, a little more often, I should say. And hopefully I'll see you guys on the air this weekend for the State CUSO parties.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Val. And what a trooper. She's not well, and you still joined us. Thank you, sister. Everyone else, thank you, everyone, for joining us on this special episode of Ham Nation, the All YL Show. Join us again next week for Ham Nation.